Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Good morning, Kansas City. Welcome to the Border Patrol on this hump day, Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. I'm Nate Bucati with you today. Stephen St. John is continuing his week-long vacation. He'll be back next week. And Jake Terez is running the show, as always, today. And we have the help of Shane Summers, who is in doing some work for us this morning as well. What a night it was last night at Kauffman Stadium. At, about 10 o'clock or so, it looked for all the world like we would be spending today dissecting the 9 minutes that Andy Reid spent sort of talking about the Jeremy Maclin situation, at least fielding questions about the Jeremy Maclin situation. That seemed like that would be the story that we would be spending most of our time on today. Then all of a sudden, the 2015 Royals returned, at least for one spectacular night. The magic was back at Kauffman Stadium, man. I'm going to be interested to see the TV numbers. I don't know. I might be able to get them a little bit later this morning. How many people were still watching the game by that point? By the time the eighth inning rolled around, with the Royals down 7-3, how many people in this town were still watching the Kansas City Royals? And I will say, I won't blame you if you told me, nah, I turned it off and went to bed. This Royals team, up until this point, hasn't given you a whole lot of reasons to think, yeah, they're going to stage another one of those historic comebacks against a team like this year's Houston Astros. In fact, this is the biggest blown lead by the Houston Astros since, yeah, the division series against the Kansas City Royals back in 2015. This Astros team is better than that Astros team was, and obviously, at least as it looks now, and I feel fairly comfortable saying this, this Royals team is not as good as that Royals team was. So, not a lot of reason to expect what happened last night to happen, but hey, it was a crazy night. How crazy was it? Alex Gordon hit a home run for the first time, I believe, in 192 games. Alex Gordon hit a home run last night. And at the time, it didn't seem much more significant than, hey, Alex Gordon hit a home run. I think that made the game 3-1 at the time. Jake Junis was getting knocked around pretty good. He'd only given up three runs through three innings at that point, but it could have been more. And he goes on to give up seven runs in less than four innings. But the Royals find a way to win. How crazy was last night? Travis Wood pitched two scoreless innings last night. How random is that? Well, it's the first time this year that Travis Wood has gone two scoreless innings in an outing. I see the look on Jake Gutierrez's face when he sees that. Look, Travis Wood has had one of the worst years we've ever seen a reliever have for the Kansas City Royals. With the two scoreless innings last night, he dropped his ERA to 8.44. Okay. He's had exactly five scoreless outings before this. And four of those five were less than an inning. Like he got an out or two, you know. So that was remarkable. And at the time, again, it seemed like that was generally mop-up duty. But the Royals put up four runs in the eighth, thanks in large part to the amazing Cool Whit Merrifield, who was two-hit Whit again last night. And this is not in any way, shape, or form to take credit away from the Royals, because they deserve all the credit in the world for fighting back the way that they did. But Ken Giles throws about 100 miles per hour. He decides to get, what did we talk about with Kelvin Herrera just yesterday with Jamie Bluma? I asked him, what's wrong with Kelvin Herrera? And the first thing that Jamie Bluma said was, he's getting beaten with the secondary stuff. There's a guy that can throw 100 miles an hour, and he's hanging sliders to people. He's getting beat on his slider. Because last year it was such a good pitch, he's fallen in love with it. He's throwing it too much. Ken Giles gave up a bases-clearing double to Whit Merrifield when he had him with a 1-2 count. And then he gave up a home run to Mike Moustakas to lose the game. Both times on off-speed pitches. Both times he hung breaking balls, and the Royals made him pay. Now, you give the Royals credit. The Royals made him pay. You know, not that hasn't happened every time this year. There have been a lot of times where there's been hanging breaking balls that the Royals have just either taken down, taken for a strike, waved at and missed, gotten out in front of, and you know, pulled on the ground or whatever. They made him pay. So this is not to take credit away from the Royals at all, but man, that's got to be something that if you're the Houston Astros and Ken Giles, you walk away from going, was that the best course of action? But it doesn't matter for the Kansas City Royals, because they won a game they had no business winning last night. Well, they won a game where they called up a young man in Jake Junis who got shelled by the best offense in the American League. He was out of the game by the fourth inning. Ned Yost had to go to his bullpen and ask for 4 1/3 innings out of McCarthy and Wood. And they won the game. That's baseball. That's the craziness of baseball. None of those things should have led to a Royals win last night, but they did. And it was special to watch. It gave you some of those feels that you had, you know, a couple years ago. It's like it's still there. You know, some of that is still there. Not enough. I mean, what Merrifield said after the game, look, we got to turn this into something. We got to turn this into a run. We got to make this become a roll, because we've had some moments like this year and nothing's ever caught fire. We've had little sparks here and there, but nothing's caught. And we'll see. Maybe this is the one. Maybe this is the game that starts a 7-game winning streak for the Royals. I mean, it just ended an 11-game winning streak for the Astros. But we'll believe it when we see it, right? To this point this year, the Royals haven't done anything to indicate that. But it did, at least for a night. I don't know how you felt, but for a night, it took you back to how special the team was a couple years ago. And it was like, man, that was so fun. Man, I miss that team. That team was doing stuff like this on a nightly basis. Not coming back from four runs down, but just exciting, thrilling wins, walk-off wins, you know. And while Whit Merrifield is one of the biggest heroes, and rightfully so, he's been the best offensive player the Royals have had this year, the heart of the order, Hosmer, Perez, Moustakas did the bulk of the damage in this game. And that was like, hey, there it is. Those are the guys. That's the foundation of what made this a championship town. Hosmer went 3-for-5 with a couple of runs scored. Sal Perez went 3-for-4 with an RBI and a couple of runs scored. And then, of course, Moustakas, 4-for-5, 2 runs, 3 RBIs. He had a double and a home run. And Alex Gordon, even though he's at the bottom of the order, had a home run in this game and scored a couple of runs and fell on his face crossing home plate on the bases clearing double by Whit Merrifield in somewhat hilarious fashion. But like, those are the guys. Oh, all right. That's how I felt watching it. Man, that was fun. Man, that reminded me of what made this team so special in 14 of 15. That's how I felt. Now, the team is still 7 games under .500. I mean,
yeah, they still have the worst record in the American League.
Yeah, let's, you know, look. And I don't know, for a day, I feel like we can suspend all that and just enjoy what last night was.
You can.
You don't enjoy it?
I think it's awesome, but I mean, it's
I'm not suggesting
it's prolonging the inevitable. It's prolonging the inevitable. That's what it comes down to.
I mean, it's one game.
Right. You know, it is one game, but you know, they split the series, and then maybe they go on a road trip, and maybe they go .500 on the road trip, and they come back, and maybe they take, you know, 4 out of 6 games at home against the Red Sox and Toronto, and they're just treading water. And then in the meanwhile, what if one of those guys, Kane, Moose, the guys you're looking to move, Haas, what if one of them gets hurt? Then you're not. I mean, it's just, look, I'm enjoying the hell of it, and I don't want to be a bad fan, and I'm never going to root against my team.
It doesn't seem like you're enjoying it at all. Like, it doesn't seem like you enjoy what happened.
No, I was cheering my ass off last night. It's great. I mean, watching that is fun. It's fun to watch your team win. But when you pull it out to a wider lens and you have perspective, this team is not going to win. Go to the playoffs this year. It's just not. I mean, it's not.
I mean, I don't think it's going to the playoffs.
No.
I will say that
they have the worst record in the American League.
They're 5.5 games out in the division.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
They still have the worst record in the American League.
They do. They do. But they literally picked up a game on basically everyone in the division last night. I mean, crazier things have happened than a team 5.5 games out before the All-Star break going on a run. I'm not predicting it. It's not sustainable to have Jake Junis and Eric Skoglund starting for you for long periods of time.
And we mentioned it yesterday. If you have a healthy Danny Duffy going and your Dono Ventura's in this rotation, then you're like, okay, maybe they can go for a run here. But, I mean, I don't feel like this team's going to rip off a double-digit win streak here.
I don't either. Like I said, look, I'm not. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not going to sit here and say that they definitively can't do it, because we've seen this team do stuff before that we thought they had no chance of doing. That's the one thing that puts you on pause here. Well, there's two things to put you on pause. One is we've seen this team rattle off 15 out of 20 when nobody in the world thought
they
could.
Not this team. We saw
this organization.
Yes.
This organization.
We saw, yeah.
With a lot of these pieces, not all the same, but a lot of these pieces. I mean,
similar pieces, but
Kane, Moose, Hosmer, Perez, Gordon are all still on this team.
Right. But who was pitching at that point in time?
I mean, didn't have great starting pitching.
Didn't have great starting pitching, but they had guys that were, they weren't Jake Junis's. You know, and I know you're going to throw out Chris Young.
We don't know how many starts that Jake Junis is going to make. I mean, Nate Carnes is going to come back at some point. Danny Duffy's going to come back at some point. We don't know.
Okay,
six
not
to
Jake Junis and Skoglund, or you know, these. My point is that this pitching staff is extremely thin, and we're running out guys that are barely fringe major leaguers.
I don't disagree with any of that. I don't disagree with any of that. There's two things that make me say it's not impossible. Again, I'm not betting on it. I don't think this team's going to make a run. I don't think this team is good enough to go to the playoffs, but I've learned my lesson, at least, to not say they have no shot. I just have. We've seen crazy things happen in this town that shouldn't have happened. And there's two things: what we've seen in the past, and this division just isn't that good. It's just not. When it all came down to before the season started, I predicted this team to go to the playoffs because this division was not impressive to me. I didn't buy the hype on Cleveland fully. I did think that Cleveland was the class of the division. I thought they were better than what they've shown right now, but I didn't think they were some 100-win team or something. And the rest of the division, to me, was pretty bad. The Twins have been better than I thought they would, but they're only 4 games over .500, and they lost last night. So literally, this team is 5.5 games out. And look, they've got the worst run differential in the league. Well, I guess the A's have a negative 57. The Royals are at negative 52. Again, I'm not disagreeing with anything that you're saying, Jake. I'm not. It's just a matter of degrees. You're saying definitively they're not going to the playoffs.
Right.
And I'm saying they're probably not going to the playoffs.
Right.
You know, that's the difference.
What do you want to put the percent at? You want to say less than 5%?
Nah. I'd say 10 to 15%.
I think that's way high.
Maybe 15's high. 5 to 10%.
I say less than 5. And in everything considering, your number one starter is on the shelf for 2 months. Ian Kennedy, your second guy that you've been depending on, hasn't looked right.
He'll get it squared away by some point this year.
We hope.
I mean, if you can find a way to stay in this thing to the point where you get Nate Karns and Danny Duffy back, I don't think that's a bad rotation at all.
No, it's not. But Duffy's not. 8 weeks. That's just before. That's being optimistic. 8 weeks.
Well, they said 6 to 8, didn't they, when he went down?
Right before he's back throwing. But he's gonna have to rebuild his arm up.
Yeah, that's true.
What's his pitch count gonna be? He's not going to have thrown the ball for 6 to 8 weeks. It's not like you're going to be like, okay, it's not like he can just jump out there and be like, all right, we're activating him from the DL, let's go. It's going to be a process, working him back in. Look, and it was a great win, and I'm sounding like a huge negator, raining on everybody's parade today when we all should be celebrating an awesome homer, an unbelievable comeback from down 7-1, and Moose at the bottom of the ninth.
15 bombs for Moose on the year, by the way. He's got a shot.
Oh, yeah.
To pass Balboni. He really does, if he doesn't get traded before. Wouldn't that be so
I fully expect it happening.
That would almost be like the perfect curse of the Balboni. Like, one guy finally has a chance to break this embarrassing
home run record,
and he's going to get traded, when he's on, 30 home runs.
Oh, I said that a month ago.
But he's at 15 home runs now, and we're in early June. So, look, I feel like we can suspend all that. We spend every day for weeks now talking about, is it time for the Royals to declare themselves as sellers? What are we, a week from the draft? I believe the draft is on the 13th. Shane, you might check me on that. But I believe that was kind of this, at least reported,
Monday
mile marker that the Royals have, where once we get through the draft, then we'll start looking at things. So Monday's the 12th. So by next week, they might be ready to kind of declare their intentions, at least to other teams, if the reports are accurate. Basically, up until that point, we keep talking about the same thing, and nothing has changed. They've been treading water, really, since the month of May. I think they went 1 game over .500 in the month of May. They've been basically playing .500 ball now. They've been treading water, and the division hasn't done anything to create any separation. So it's the same topic over and over and over again. We keep talking about it. I think for one day, we can suspend that and enjoy what was a special night at Kauffman Stadium. That was cool. Does it mean anything? Only time will tell. I'm inclined to say no. I'm inclined to say baseball, crazy things happen sometimes. There's still a handful of really good players on this team that can make you pay even against a really good, closer like Giles. And we take it for what it's worth, one game out of 162. But time will tell. Maybe this is a spark. Maybe this is something. But I think for today, we can just enjoy it. Just say that was great. That was fun. And that was reminiscent of what we got to see a couple years ago when this team was truly special. We'll take a break. We'll hear from Ned Yost, Whit Merrifield, Mike Moustakas, Alex Gordon. Can Alex Gordon get going? At the end of the day, he still only had one hit, but he did have a home run and a walk. Can he get going? Coming up on the show, Scott Carroll's going to join us, Kansas City native, Major League Baseball player. Benny Failhaber will join us at 8:30 to talk about the longest home unbeaten streak in MLS. Sporting Kansas City will be back at home on Saturday. And then at 9 o'clock, Rustin Dodd. Is he going to be in studio? He is going to be in studio after a late night last night. Rustin Dodd will give us more context on all of this. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Alex Gordon hit a home run last night. Apparently, while I was on vacation, my son's baseball team played against Alex Gordon's son's baseball team. That's insignificant. But the fact that Alex Gordon hit a home run is significant. First one of the season. Here's Ned Yost on Gordo's power last night.
Yeah, and we talked about it a little bit today about Gordy looked much better last night. You know, a couple of long flyouts and double down the line and finally got that monkey off his back with his first home run.
Gordon did hit the ball hard a couple of times two nights ago. I was at that game, and one he pulled one foul, got a base hit, got under another pitch that looked like if he had just squared it up a little bit more, might have carried. So he gets the home run last night. We'll see if this sparks a turnaround for what's been just an absolutely terrible offensive season for Alex Gordon. And Ned Yost was asked if there's a sense of relief for Gordon after that home run.
Yeah, I think so. You know, the guys were playing with him a little bit, and everybody kind of gave him, you know, the cold shoulder when he came in. But, yeah, I think it was definitely, a sense of relief for him to finally hit a home run. A
couple of funny moments for Alex Gordon in this game. He gets the cold shoulder from his teammates. He comes into the dugout, and they all ignore him after the home run. And then, of course, the bases clearing double by Whit Merrifield that brought the Royals back into the game in the eighth inning. He was going to slide. I think he was going to dive. And then his teammates were telling him that he didn't need to, so they were telling him to stand up. He got caught in between, crossed home plate, and then fell flat on his face, which was pretty funny. But the Royals got the runs and then came back and, of course, win the game. We don't get to hear from Alex Gordon very often. He's not a talker. He doesn't love talking to the media. But because he was at the heart of so much of the big moments in the game last night, he did talk to the media and spoke about all those things.
The last couple nights, it seems like you've been having some really good swings. Does it feel like that to you? Or?
Yeah, better. I mean, still not where I want to be, but I'm just going up there trying to have quality at-bats, not worrying about, you know, what I've done in the past and, you know, trying to do everything in one night. Just, like I said, just trying to have quality at-bats and hopefully go from there.
Take us through the home run. I mean, that had to feel pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Two strikes, just trying to battle and, you know, threw a fastball and, you know, my spot down and in and put a good swing on it and then came in the dugout and kind of got a big league by all my teammates. So I kind of knew that was going to happen. It was a pretty funny moment.
And the next at bat, too, another hard shot to left. I mean, so that's why I was getting at. But it seems like things are starting to come around.
Yeah. And we started talking about line drive outs and the positive thing. That's when you know you're struggling. So, you know, just quality at bats. That's all.
The eighth inning rally?
Pretty cool. You know, guys getting on. You know, I'm getting that walk and get up Witt, who's, you know, our hottest hitter right there and has a good at bat and put together something special and, you know, get three runs against a great team that's playing really well right now.
Was it the most graceful?
No, I'll explain what happened. I was going around third, thought it was going to be a close play, so, you know, I was kind of like expecting a head first slide, and then I see Chesler and Moose throw up their hands, so I try to you know, brace myself, but then I started swimming, and the only thing I cared about was touching home plate, and that's what happened. So didn't matter how it looked, just as long as I touched home plate.
You're feeling pretty good before that too, Alex. They've got 35 plate appearances without striking out, and you keep track of that at all. But you must be seeing them pretty well if you 35 plate appearances.
Not trying to do too much. Just trying to hit the ball where it's pitched and seeing the ball a lot better, letting it get deep, and hopefully over time it's going to get better. But you know that's pretty big for me, a guy who strikes out a lot. So just trying to put quality at bats together.
Alex, you just go right down to the tunnel after the homer.
Yeah, I yell at the guys. I can't tell you what I said, but like I said earlier, I knew that was going to happen. Just the situation and not hitting a home run for a while. So just having fun with it, and it was a good time.
Alex Gordon, could he get going now? First home run of the season as the Royals win it in stunning comeback fashion, 9-7 over the Houston Astros. Look, when winning streaks end, they usually end in spectacular fashion, and that's what happened last night as the Astros had an 11-game winning streak snapped. Could the Royals start a winning streak of their own? Only time will tell. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Andy Reid on Jeremy Maclin. Thankfully for Andy Reid and the Chiefs, the Royals took that story off the front page a little bit, but we're still going to get to it. After this, Chiefs were back out at OTAs yesterday. Had a chance to go out there and watch some of practice, watch some of Pat Mahomes back at it, see if he was making any progress. From when I watched rookie minicamp, and he was really struggling. I thought he looked better. He threw some really good passes, and then he made some other plays where you just go. I don't want to name any of the other members of the media. I was standing there watching in case they don't want these. But, like, there was one throw that Pat Mahomes made. And literally, the person next to me just goes, what was that? What the hell was that? There's just that stuff. That stuff's still happening with Pat Mahomes. He's going to be an interesting quarterback to watch grow and develop. I will be perfectly honest, I usually think it's ridiculously boring to watch football practice. I don't think there's very much to gain from it most times. Some people love it. It's not my favorite thing. There are times, though, where it's really interesting. And watching Pat Mahomes is fascinating to me. Yesterday, he comes out in 11-on-11s. First thing he does, they run a little out and up to Kareem Hunt. And, I mean, he throws a perfect spiral, perfect touch on it, decisive, and, I mean, just drops it right in the breadbasket, touchdown. Throws another touchdown pass right after that. Nice. Then there's another play where things kind of break down a little bit. He kind of shuffles around. And then throws a shovel pass to his offensive guard. And his offensive guard, I can't remember which offensive lineman it was at the time, but he literally just caught it and then just kind of fell down like, well, I'm not an eligible receiver. And that was the play that led to, what the hell was that? What was that? And there's a bunch of that sprinkled in. And then there's a bunch of just incomplete passes, you know, thrown off his back foot. You know, wobbly ducks, things like that. It's like the whole gamut, man. Like, you see a few of those flashes. Like, you saw that pass to Kareem Hunt, you go, oh, that's impressive. That was a big league throw. And then you see other stuff, which is like decision-making, where you go, what is he, in the words of Neil Smith, I don't know, what is he doing? And then there's other plays where you're just like, that's just sloppy. That's just sloppy mechanics. That's just, you know, that's not going to cut it at the NFL level. And so I have to say right now, the way that I've seen him in the two practices I've watched him, he is not close to being a representative NFL quarterback. He's not close. But you see the flashes there that if he takes to the coaching from Andy Reid, and I don't know how long it's going to take, a year, 2 years, I don't know. But if he takes to all that and cleans up the stupid, goofy decision-making stuff and the sloppy mechanics, he could be pretty good. So it's just going to be really fascinating to watch him as time goes on. But all Andy Reid talked about when he spoke yesterday, and he was the only person that spoke, no players, no assistant coaches, that's going to come today. I'll be back out there today to watch things and hopefully talk to some players. The only thing Andy Reid talked about was Jeremy Maclin. And he knew that was going to be the case, So he opened up with a statement about the process of cutting Jeremy Maclin.
I'll address the Jeremy Maclin situation, since I'm sure we'll be asked about that. I think everybody knows I'm very fond of Jeremy. This gives him time to hook on with another team, which he will do. Jeremy can still play. This is part of the NFL business. I'm not going to get into specifics with it. We go about weighing a bunch of different things. It's a decision we end up making. This is the worst part about the job, clearly. It's not easy for John. It's not easy for me or the coaches. But it's a decision we end up making, and we go forward. I've got a ton of trust in the young guys that they'll step up and do a good job for us. And we've got the point that we have here is we've got some good players. So we're okay there.
Okay there, says Andy Reid. He was asked about Jeremy Maclin being, quote, his number one guy, end quote.
Yeah, I've never really been a go. I think everybody's got to be ready to go. You know, there's not one go-to. I've never said we had a number one guy. That's just not where I've ever been with this thing. And we try to mix it up the best way we possibly can. 2 years ago, you saw Jeremy Lockedge. Last year, you saw Trav with a lot of catches. So, I mean, and Tyreek had a few. You know, so we try to spread it around. That way you're able to put enough, you know, as much pressure on defenses as you possibly can.
And I do think that's true. I don't think Andy Reid's the kind of guy that, like, hey, we got one guy, we're going to wear him out. But he did say that Tyreek Hill will be the man to get most of the snaps at that position vacated by the cutting of Jeremy Maclin. Speaking of wide receivers getting cut, another big name about to be released in the NFL. Could he be a fit for the Kansas City Chiefs? We'll talk about that when we come back on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. The Border Patrol continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez, Shane Summers, all with you today. So the Chiefs cut Jeremy Maclin. Andy Reid says they've got enough pieces that guys can step up and they can still be a Super Bowl contender with what they have. I think a lot of us are relatively skeptical about that. They're not the only team to say goodbye to a relatively prominent wide receiver. Reports out of New Jersey that the New York Jets continue their massive roster overhaul. General manager, boy, how do you say his name? Mike McCannion says, quote, we've advised Eric Decker that if a trade doesn't happen, we'll move forward without him, which pretty much means they've already tried to trade him and nobody wants him, because you wouldn't announce that you're going to cut him if you really think you have a decent chance of trading him, because teams will be much less likely to trade for somebody that they know is about to get cut and they can just sign. Would you, Jake Gutierrez, be interested in bringing in Eric Decker for the Kansas City Chiefs, who was coming off of hip and shoulder injuries?
Looking at this roster, he would, I mean, outside of Tyreek Hill, who, I mean, I don't know how to classify him. I mean, we could say he's a wide receiver, but he takes carries out of the backfield. I mean, he's a utility player.
I think he's going to be a full-time wide receiver next year.
So you don't think he's going to be taking any carries out of the backfield?
I think he'll take some. I think Andy Reid likes to switch things around enough that he'll be lined up in the backfield some.
See, I feel like you need to use him like he was used last year. Like, I think that's why his value. Anyways, the answer is yes. I would take a chance on him, because there's no number one guy. And he's past his prime. Was he 31, I think?
Decker?
Yeah. I think he turned 31 in March.
He's 30, right? He just turned 30 in March.
Okay. So, I mean, that's the injuries for sure. He only played in 3 games last year.
Hip and shoulder surgery in the offseason.
Right. But,
says he's healthy now. He was practicing with the team.
I mean, the guy's put up some unbelievable numbers. I mean, when he was with Peyton in Denver, he had some fine seasons, man. I mean, well, double-digit touchdowns.
In 2015, with the Jets, when he was healthy, he played 15 games and had 1,000 yards receiving.
And 12 touchdowns.
And 12 touchdowns.
I mean, right.
That's a legit weapon if he comes back healthy. He only played 3 games, like you said, last year.
Right. But, I mean, that you know, before he got hurt last year, 3 out of 4 seasons prior to that, he had over 1,000 yards receiving. And in the year he didn't have over 1,000 yards, he was, you know, 30 or 40 yards away from it, you know. So it's, I would take a shot on him because I don't think he's going to be really expensive.
Yeah, you might be able to get him for relatively cheap. I mean, if you want to talk about salary cap issues, why are the Jets cutting him? They're going to save $13.5 million against the cap. We talk about the mess that the Chiefs have had cap-wise, and they have. And by the way, they fired their capologist because of it. Cody Tapp asked Andy Reid yesterday, by the way, if the situation with Trip McCracken had anything to do with the situation with Jeremy Maclin, and he said zero. By the way, I asked Andy Reid, did you make any attempts to renegotiate the contract with Jeremy Maclin?
Did you guys have any conversation with him about trying to rework his deal?
I'm not
going to get into all that. Which I basically expected as the answer, but I feel like you have to ask that question. The report from Mike Garofalo from NFL.com was that they never asked him to take a pay cut. He tweeted that out. The Chiefs are not commenting on that. If that, in fact, is true, that means this was more than just a salary cap situation, you would think. It means they don't think he's the player that he used to be, which is possible. I mean, he was not that good of a player last year. He really wasn't. You would think that if they felt like there was any sort of a chance that he could be the player that he was 2 years ago, that they would have at least tried to renegotiate the contract with him. Hey, look, you're a $10 million cap hit. We need some of that money so we can sign all our draft picks. What can we do here? You would think Jeremy Maclin, who just got married, who is from nearby, who seemed to really enjoy his time here and get along with his teammates well and all that, he might have been up for it. That's why I asked Andy Reid the question. He doesn't want to get into that. I respect that. But it is interesting to see, is this a deal that's purely based on salary cap or is this also a football decision? Anyway, back to Eric Decker. The Jets are going to save $13.5 million by cutting him against the cap. And yeah, maybe the Chiefs can get him for cheap. They clearly don't have a ton of cap space, so they can't go out and sign somebody that's really expensive. But maybe this is the type of guy they could take a flyer on, considering the fact that he is coming off of 2 surgeries, one to his hip, one to his shoulder, considering the fact that he's on the wrong side of 30 now. It might be the type of guy that they could bring in and not pay too much money to. It will be interesting to see where Eric Decker winds up.
I mean, you look at some of the other free agent signings this offseason, big names that were on the market. You know, DeSean Jackson, 3 years, $33 million. Brandon Marshall, 2 years, $11 million. Alshon Jeffrey, which still shocks me, 1 year, $9.5 million. I mean, I think Decker's probably going to be somewhere close to where Brandon Marshall was. You know, somewhere around $5 or $6 million a year for, you know, 2 years. And I think, you know, that's doable for the Chiefs.
Yeah, it should be. Certainly should be. Meanwhile, Trip McCracken. Gone. Trip McCracken. The Chiefs need to do a better job of managing the cap, and they seem to be well aware of that. So they made some moves this offseason. We will take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. All right, that we're on 38 The Spot. Coming up, we're going to talk with former big leaguer in Kansas City and Scotty Carroll at 7:30 about the Royals, Gary Lezak, Benny Failhaber, and Rustin Dodd, all still coming up on the show. We'll see you tomorrow morning on 38 The Spot. Keep listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.